Thank you.
Thank you.
This meeting is being recorded.
Okay, well then, I'm gonna go ahead and open the 26th of April meeting of the Planning Commission at this time. And I can just about see everything, but since we've been doing this online, we might just well be consistent and do a roll call. I don't know, Haley or Chris, whoever wants to do that.
Sure, I can do that. Commissioner Kappas?
Here.
Commissioner Michael?
Here.
Commissioner Hohen?
Here.
Commissioner Andes?
Here.
Commissioner Whitaker?
Here.
And Chair Leifer?
Here. So our first order of business is, as usual, the minutes of our April 12th meeting. We need to get a motion to approve, but is there any comments or corrections that need to be made?
You know, Chair Leifer, I don't have it right at the tip of my fingers, but one of the paragraphs started out with calling somebody something other than a commissioner, and I can't find it. Oh, commercial.
They were probably calling me something.
On page 3. The middle paragraph, it's commercial Michael referred to Whiskey Ridge. And it's simply just a typo, it's Commissioner Michael.
Lori, are you getting that correction?
Yeah, Chair Lack, we will get it once the motion's made to make that correction. We'll finalize that.
I did hear that. Thank you.
Are there any other comments? If not, I would entertain a motion noting that correction that Roger brought up for approval.
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes with the change for commercial Michael to be Commissioner Michael.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay, Ben seconded. All four. I can see all you guys. Why don't you raise your hands if you're for this motion? Yeah, looks pretty much unanimous. So motion's carried and the minutes are approved with that one small correction. So not sure if we've got anybody out there online that wants to address the commission on something other than what's on our agenda tonight. But if there is, speak up right now. Don't see anybody wanting to do that, so we'll move on towards our agenda. And I noticed that Tom just lit up. Hi, Tom. So everybody's present. But we need to move into the agenda, and the first item is the Stormwater Management Manual Code Amendment. And if Matt, you have some comments you'd like to make on that at this point?
The Planning Commission reviewed the proposed changes during a public workshop held on March 22nd. The city must comply with the requirements set forth in the Western Washington Phase 2 stormwater permit. The requirements being addressed currently is the Department of Ecology Stormwater Management Manual for Western Washington. The city must have a plan review process that ensures stormwater design comply with this manual. The city is currently using the 2014 edition of the manual. A new edition was released in 2019. The phase two permit requires the city to adopt the new version by June 30th. Staff has identified the following the attached code provisions in Title 22 that will be required to ensure consistency with the 2019 manual. Minor revisions will also be required in Title 14. The complete packet of all the revisions will be brought to City Council for approval in June 2022.
Are there any questions of Matt by the commissioners? Doesn't look like there's any. I need to open a hearing for the taking of any public testimony on this. So I'm going to go ahead and open the public hearing for any comment that might be forthcoming from the general public. So hearing is open to the public. Is there anybody there that has anything to say relating to the Stormwater Management Manual code amendments? I'm not seeing anything, so I would entertain a motion to close this portion of the public testimony hearing.
I make a motion to close the public hearing.
Do I have a second?
A second.
Let's raise hands again if you're in approval of that. Looks like it's approved. So the public testimony portion of the hearing is therefore closed at this time. And I'll open this thing up for discussion. What we're looking for is a staff would like us to have a recommendation this evening to the council that noting that we've recommended this for approval. So if we can get to that, that's where we're headed. Is there any further comment or questions that anybody has?
No further comment here. We had a good workshop discussion on this last month, as Matt mentioned.
Not seeing anything else either. So is there a motion to send this on to the council with our approval and get things underway?
I'll move that Planning Commission approve the code amendments for 2019 Stormwater Management Manual for a City Council approval.
I'll second.
Second. Okay, Jerry, second. All for that motion. Raise your hands. Good. That's carried then. So thanks, Matt.
Thank you for your time.
That brings us to the second item on our public hearing list, and that's the residential density incentives, a code amendment related to that. And Haley, you're presenting that, I think,
yes.
Right? Okay. Well, do you have anything that you'd like to add to it before we?
Yes, I would. Thank you, Chair Lifer. Good evening, Planning Commissioners and everyone else here that's on the call. We had a workshop during the last Planning Commission meeting related to the residential density incentives, and staff found that some of the incentives that were in code were basically now the status quo or a routine requirement that had either been elevated at the state level or within city code. And the purpose of this residential density incentive table is to provide options to applicants to gain additional densities for going above and beyond outside of the code. So we have sought to remove these options that are now the status quo. And we have updated the options to elevate the bar basically in order to obtain density incentives for these residential developments. During the last Planning Commission meeting, it was suggested that we leave the historic preservation condition in. Staff had originally proposed to strike that, and the Planning Commissioners pointed out that, you know, we may want to use that for some sort of a city historic project and to leave it in there just in case there is something that comes along later. So we've left it in there, and we agree that was a great idea. We have also provided a checklist for built green incentives. And this is a comprehensive energy incentive checklist that is filled out by the applicants to elevate the standards with the building construction and the site design. And we did meet with the MBA built green folks and kind of talked through the different levels of statuses. And it was suggested to us that the LEED status be elevated to, I believe it was gold. I think it was silver before in the code, and we've elevated it to gold because LEED gold is more aligned with, there's not a direct comparison, but it is more in line with the built green 4 status, which staff is recommending. Staff had originally put in the code that the verification be provided within 90 days of occupancy. The MBA asked for this to be extended to 180 days. And, you know, staff didn't feel that waiting 6 months to close a file was the best choice for the city, but we did just kind of split the difference and suggest 120 days. And the folks on the MBA side seem to be amenable to that. If we do need to extend it in the future, if for some reason the deadline isn't met, we're not likely going to enforce. That is just a lot of time and energy on both sides. If we are finding that the deadline isn't being met and there is a good reason for it, we will bring a code change forward in the future. But we thought that 120 days to get the remaining paperwork after the project closes out was fair. And if we find that that's in fact not fair, I am more than happy to bring it back and change that at a later date. We did have a change to the perimeter fencing requirement that's in your packet. And if you don't mind, I would like to share my screen here and I'll describe the edit that we're proposing. I don't even know if I'm on the right screen. Can you guys see an email with like red and black? Okay, great. So the original condition basically was saying that perimeter fencing would only be counted as a benefit if it was visible from the right of way, because staff felt that the perimeter fencing requirement was kind of a gimme, and it was a very easy requirement. Most applicants want to build a perimeter fence. And the intent of this condition is really to make it so, you know, you're not driving down a street and seeing mismatched fences. You know, 67th Avenue in Marysville, there's some examples of mismatched fences, and we think it would look better if the development had a nice cohesive fence around it. So we had proposed that the fencing credit only be applied to fences that are visible from the public. And it was suggested to us earlier today by a member of the MBA to continue to allow perimeter fencing to be credited throughout the development in all areas, not just areas visible by the right of way. And so as a compromise, we proposed that if that's the case, let's elevate that standard a bit more and require perimeter fencing plus 6 feet of landscaping. And we did add a condition that states if you are including additional landscaping as part of another requirement, you basically can't get credit for both. Sometimes when we're working with applicants, there will be a deviation request. So most recently in some of the in like the Lakewood master plan area, there's a requirement that houses face the front of the street and we want the front porches to look really nice. But if it's facing a busy street or the site isn't conducive to it, sometimes that just isn't practical. So we've allowed applicants to kind of dress up the back of the house and use landscaping in order to deviate from that requirement. So if additional landscaping is provided, basically deviate from another code section, we do not believe that that can also be used as an RDI benefit. We would want the applicant to choose from a different portion in the table. And I did notice Dylan was on the line. We did talk about the first part of this. I don't know, Dylan, if you've seen item one and two. So if you have feedback on that, let me know. But we're just trying to basically say, if you're getting credit for landscaping in any other area of the project or for any other horse trading going on with the project, then it wouldn't be eligible for the LID benefit. So I can pull this up again if needed. I can also paste this in the comments if you guys want to read it or look at it closer. That would be the change that is different in the packet that you see that staff would be proposing for the group to consider. And I'm sending it in the comments too, so you can look at it at your own pace here. We did also get a request from the MBA, and I'm saying the MBA, but what I mean is a member of the MBA or collectively from an MBA, just a comment that we were asked to consider this morning related to low impact development. And staff has removed that as an RDI incentive option. When the LID requirement was added to this list, that was before the state required the applicants demonstrate feasibility with the LID regulations. This was before the state required it. Now the state requires the applicants seek to do LID. If the site isn't conducive for LID, if it's not sandy or the soils aren't right, the applicant can basically say this is infeasible and do a storm vault or another traditional storm type method. But since LID requirements are now a requirement in the stormwater manual, staff did not feel that that was something that additional density should be awarded for. And, you know, that's not to say the LID isn't important to the city. It's just that it's a normal standard now. And the point of this table is to elevate standards. We did get a request to leave that in. And the request, and maybe, you know, during the comment period, if Dylan wants to, you can elaborate on this. But what I heard was basically, the engineers in some cases can look at a site and deem it infeasible per the ecology regulations. But, you know, the applicant can go above and beyond normal methods to ensure LID is implemented on the site. And for that reason, the request was made to leave it in. Staff looked at this today a little closer, and I'm feeling that we'd still like to strike that requirement. I feel that it is now the norm for stormwater regulations, and would like to suggest that this be continued to be removed from this, but we are happy to facilitate the fencing request. And I felt that that was reasonable, same with the timing and the lead. So we have tried to work with the MBA as much as we could on this within reason. So that is what has changed since the last time, and I'll turn it over to you for questions or to open the public hearing.
Do you have any commissioners have any questions of Haley before we open up the hearing to public testimony?
I do have a couple questions. Going to the fencing and the landscaping credit, are you envisioning that? Again, I know we took the verbiage out of there visible for the public right away, but say that it's in a backyard or a side yard from a property, are you envisioning the 6-foot landscaping adjacent to a separate, like a potential parcel and then the fence?
Yes. Otherwise we didn't feel, so before it was basically you could put a fence around the perimeter of the whole property and get credit. And we felt like that was, I guess, too easy to obtain. And, you know, it was an easier requirement. So you can still put the fence there if you think it's needed. You just won't get density credits for it. If you add the 6-foot buffer, yeah, that the envision is that it would be around the whole site. If there's a weird situation where it just doesn't make sense, I'd like to think we could work with applicants on it. But that's the vision, that the whole property is surrounded by a nice fence and a nice six, at least 6 foot buffer of landscaping on all sides.
I feel like that it gives the potential or presents the potential for an adverse possession if you've got landscaping on the backside of a fence. Or how do you?
I guess I don't know if I have a great answer for that.
Right.
It's a good point. I think if there is concerns about that happening, then the applicant can just choose not to do that on that side. You know, we're not forcing anyone to do the landscaping. There's a whole list of items to choose from on the RDI. So if this one condition doesn't work specifically or you have concerns, we would just probably say, you know, can you pick something else or pay cash or, you know, pick another option if it doesn't make sense right then and there. Mm-hmm. But that's a good point. Thank you, Sunshine.
Thanks. And then my second question was item number 5, that all benefits shall be completed prior to final subdivision and or prior to granting a certificate of occupancy. What happens in a phasing potential, like on an apartment project that has multiple buildings? Because are you talking about certificate of occupancy as the final occupancy, or is there potential that it could be before the first temporary occupancy?
I interpreted that to mean final occupancy. So if there's an apartment complex in phases, it would be due for each phase. I mean, some of the incentives, especially if it's the Belt Green, you're not going to be able to do that you know, until final occupancy or after. So that just means like, hey, you know, besides the Belt Green checklist that we're accepting 120 days later, we want everything done before we grant occupancy. And if it's something before final plat, like let's say you've chose the option to pay, you know, the amount of money for each bonus unit, then we would want that payment prior to recording. Otherwise it just gets kicked to the next person. So If it's something we can collect prior to recording, that's what we'd prefer. If it's something that is a physical change, that would need to be done before occupancy. I believe perimeter landscaping and plat type improvements would need to be done before final plat. And then if anything is deferred to the building submittals, that would be final occupancy.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Any other questions? I'm going to go ahead and open the hearing up for public testimony on the residential density initiatives. If there's anybody out there that would like to make comments, speak up at this time.
Thanks, Chair Leifer, members of the Planning Commission, and thank you to Haley. I know it was short notice today trying to get a meeting with you and to chat about this a little bit, but we appreciate the opportunity to comment on these important issues. So before I dig into it a little bit, I just wanted to provide a little bit of a background as far as data for affordability and the struggle that we're in with the housing crisis. The National Association of Home Builders released their 2022 priced out models and estimates. For the state of Washington, for every $1,000 you increase the median price of a home, 2,182 households can no longer afford that home. So we're in a very price-sensitive market. And in Snohomish County, the data is as of April, the median home sell price was $752,000. The income needed to qualify for that is $198,000. The median household income in Snohomish County is only $89,000. So we have a huge discrepancy between attainability of these homes. And so when you look at that data more, BIAW, our state association, went through and looked at that by the county and said that 90% of households in Snohomish County cannot afford to purchase the median new home price under the current market conditions. And that was one of the top five counties in the state that reached above that 90% threshold. So we're definitely struggling to have attainable housing. And to go in that a little more, Major Listing Services has reported that we have about 0.2 months, so less than a week supply of homes available in Snohomish County. So if we stopped building, we'd run out of homes in about a week. And that's crazy given that the typical healthy market is 4 to 6 months of supply. So we're extremely lagging when it comes to the opportunity to even get a home. So digging that a little more, as we're talking about the RDI and things like that, the recent new energy efficiency requirements, the IEW has estimated that that's increased the cost of a home by over $20,000. So again, pricing people out of this attainability, making affordability a lot more difficult. So as we're looking at these credits, I think it's important to have sort of that lens as we go forward, because these incentives are definitely important to have feasibility for folks to build homes, so that folks like myself, I'm a renter, I can't afford a home right now. I would love the opportunity, but I can't right now. But I just wanted to thank Haley and the entire staff for the inclusion of fences and landscaping. I think removing that credit sort of removed an opportunity. So there might be some interesting things like Sunshine pointed out, but I think having that ability that if a builder can make it feasible to still get a credit for that is a good thing rather than just removing the credit altogether. So I really appreciate that opportunity to leave that in this RDI. I think going forward with the LIDs, like we have a slight disagreement, but as we talked about today, there are interesting opportunities that could potentially be available for someone to get a credit for an LID that may not have typically happened. So if they would have had an infeasibility done for that LID, but still could achieve it by going above and beyond that code, we think that it would be a good incentive to keep that in place, that they would still get that credit for that LID. So that was sort of the concept. And I think you explained it well, Haley, from our perspective, is that we still want that opportunity if it can be achieved. Obviously, it's more sustainable and a healthier approach. So rather than perhaps building a vault, you could get something a little better for the community and the environment. So a big thanks as well for working with our Built Green team. It was important to get them included as someone that could be, I guess, a certifier. And that timeline as well, as you're dealing with verifiers and other folks. I know our team worked with you to explain that a little bit, because it's important to see that firsthand approach to it. But ultimately, I think it's not that we're against this change necessarily. It's that we want to make sure that it is practical and reasonable. So as you're looking at these calculations, to ensure that the RDI actually equates to folks wanting to build more homes, and not just more homes, but more homes, more types of homes at more price points, and more opportunities like folks like myself to afford one and attain one. So as you're looking at the calculations, things like that, I would just encourage everyone to be innovative and creative as we look at ways that we can address this housing crisis. And again, happy to answer any questions, but ultimately we're just trying to get more incentives in place so we can get more homes. Thanks again for the time. I'll answer any questions you have.
I got a question about the LED thoughts that you have. There's reference made, you made a comment to Haley, I'm looking at exhibit 3 here, and then she answered back to you on this thing, but I don't have a copy of what you had turned into her, it seems like. It's noted over here, but it's not my package. Does anybody else have that?
There was anything in the packet written up about this. This was something that was discussed this morning with the MBA. I included a comment about Built Green that was sent earlier, but we didn't get anything written. I just tried to troubleshoot it this morning with the MBA and talk through it.
Okay. I just, so I can get a clear understanding here, Dylan or Haley, in reading down through what I do have as exhibit 3, it seems that there is a difference in opinion there between staff's position and what Dylan has put forth. And I'm just curious, for the benefit of the other commissioners as well as myself, is what you would like to see things remain as they were, or if you go to this, that there would be an incentive of some kind that would make it worthwhile to support where staff is coming from. And if that's the case, what would that incentive look like?
And I was trying to think of that actually before this meeting, if there's a way we could sort of meet in the middle. It's difficult because an example I had from one of my members was that they had a project that was deemed infeasible for LID, and a lot of the projects around them, they sort of looked at them, and the majority of those did a vault style stormwater. So when they looked at the approach that they took, they decided to go above and beyond and go ahead and try to do the LID. And they were able to achieve that instead of doing the vault when they weren't required to by code. And they were one of the few developments in that area that went ahead and did that. And so given they really didn't have to do it, but they decided to, we want to leave that opportunity for them to get some sort of incentive or to encourage other folks like them in that position that may not have to do an LID to go ahead and do that. And I think for the sustainability and the approach that the city's probably desiring, they probably want more LIDs. And so I think leaving it in there would provide the opportunity for folks to use that incentive to encourage that LID that may not be built otherwise or may not be done otherwise. So that was sort of my aspect of it. How, if we need to change the wording, the, I guess, deal with the feasibility aspect or whatnot to make the staff feel more comfortable or whatnot. But I think the ultimate goal is that we think if you leave the incentive in, you'll get more LIDs.
Just curious, Haley, what kind of flexibility would there be, or how would you respond, or is there any way of compromising on something that would help the position of the master builders and their people they represent?
Yeah, just a point of clarification, and maybe Chris knows more about this than me. During the public hearing, it's my understanding we're supposed to kind of receive comments and then close the public hearing and then talk through it. Or is Chris, is it okay if we kind of state our position during the public hearing? I'm a little rusty on the rules.
Yeah, generally we should go on to the, if there's questions of the presenter, that's fine. But as far as deliberation and all that stuff, that would occur after the public hearing is closed. But yeah, if you need clarification on anything, absolutely.
Yeah, and I can clarify, I guess. Sorry, I'm throwing a monkey wrench at all this. I'm just trying to follow the procedure. I can let you know staff's position on it when the public hearing's closed. And then maybe if Dylan still wants to chime in, I'm sure the planning commissioners can allow that if needed, to have the conversation related to analyzing it.
Yeah, I brought this up at this time because I did want to ask Dylan those questions, but if there's no further questions by the other commissioners, we can close the public testimony portion of this hearing. Are there any other questions?
I have a point of clarification that could probably be addressed after the public hearing.
Chair Leifer, there's two other individuals on the call here that may want to provide testimony on this topic as well.
I'm ready to receive comment from whoever that might be. Speak up if you've got something you'd like to enter into the record. Is that Robbie or Ellsworth? Is that? Those are the two names I see, Chris. Is there somebody else that you're aware of?
Nope, those are the two. They don't seem to want to provide any testimony this evening.
Well, with that, I would entertain a motion to adjourn the public testimony portion of this hearing.
I'll make a motion to adjourn the public hearing.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Motion's been made and seconded. You want to show of hands for approval of that motion? Yeah, looks like it's approved. So that portion of the hearing is closed, and we can enter into deliberations on this topic at this time. So whatever the questions and clarifications needed are, fire away.
So I had a quick question. Maybe I wasn't following correctly, but from what I'm hearing from Dylan's presentation or testimony, the request to leave in the LID option. But looking back at the staff report, it looked like the justification for removing the LID element is it's just going to be a part of the overall application process with the 2019 Stormwater Management Manual approval that's coming in June. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. Correct. I believe that this was already adopted recently into the stormwater manual a few years ago, where LID applicants are required to consider LID methods first in the manual. And if they can't, then they can go to the next step with the stormwater vault and whatnot. And, you know, this might be a little bit of my opinion. So if Sunshine or anybody else who knows more about this can chime in, feel free to. But I, you know, to deem it unfeasible for LID, I don't think is the highest bar. So I think if someone looks at the soils and everything and says, hey, this is not feasible for LID, they can easily move to the next step. And what, you know, I think Dylan was trying to explain is that, yeah, you know, a lot of people can say this is unfeasible, move to the next step. This is the state requirement. But they felt like, okay, we're going to go above and beyond to make it feasible. We should get credit for that. And I guess it's kind of a philosophical question, at least for me. I'm kind of struggling with it because the state basically says, you know, look at this first, try and do this first if you can't move to step two. So I kind of feel like there's different levels at the state level to meet it where they say, this is infeasible. Okay, we're moving on. And while I appreciate them looking at it one more time to make sure it's actually feasible, I just don't know if that's an appropriate reward for density bonus questions when if it is feasible, it's either feasible or it's not. So I guess I'm not really wrapping my head around the two tiers of feasibility, the tier where it's, you know, I guess not feasible at the state level, but for LID, they need to go in. And then I wouldn't know really how to quantify that. It just, LID methods used to not be the first method required by the state. And so it was kind of cutting edge at the time when we added that in there. And the city said, you know, wow, this is cutting edge. We would love to see more LID, added it in there. Now it's the first requirement in the stormwater manual. So we've removed it because the bar has been elevated. So that's my take on it. And I think staff would recommend that it is removed. If we do get more information or realize there is something more cutting edge that really is that we feel going above and beyond the stormwater manual, we would totally consider putting it back in. But I'm just not at that point yet to recommend that. But of course, it's up to the planning commission. So, and yeah.
I personally was thinking on the same track there, Haley.
And I can't remember if it got included in the last stormwater manual for update or not, but I think since we're in the process of adopting the other one, that it's kind of a moot point anyway, but it's a good point of clarification. And although I do love having options and other things and not see things be given away, I don't know how you would go about measuring, like you said, a requirement, and how do you, I think it would be a challenge to try to justify a measurement.
Any more comments or questions? I'm not hearing any, so staff would like to hear a recommendation for these residential density incentives to be made as an approval by the commission to go to the council. Is there any kind of a motion to that effect?
I'll make a motion that we submit the residential density incentives to the city council for approval.
Is there a second to that? Motion made and seconded. All that are in favor of that motion, please raise your hand. Looks like it's passed. So that code amendment's on its way, and that brings us to item number 3.
Just one point of clarification. I just wanted to clarify on the record, I don't think we need a revote or anything, that the changes recommended by Planning Commission included the change that I mentioned related to perimeter fencing. That wasn't in the packet, that was presented at the meeting. So I'm going to assume that you're approving the changes as presented by staff along with the packet. So I just wanted to put that on the record. And we'll take care of that change on the paperwork side.
Okay, well.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks. We'll move on to the Sunnyside.
Chair Leifer. Yes. This is Roger Hohen. I just wanted to comment that I really thought it was pretty appropriate statistics that Dylan talked about in what $1,000 cost increase does to shutting out families from being able to purchase a home, and the numbers of supply that's available. And I just wanted to offer the caution of, which I've brought up in the past, that we just don't create too large a overall cost to increase housing, and that to just for the council to, or at least the planning commission to keep in mind the importance of the affordability that we can allow in new housing.
Thanks for the comment, Roger. So with that, I'm going to turn the floor over to Chris. I assume, Chris, you're going to speak to us regarding the East Sunnyside Whiskey Ridge design guidelines.
Yeah, thanks, Chair Leifer. So we've workshopped this a few times. What staff is requesting is the Planning Commission take testimony tonight on the proposed changes, and then ultimately recommend approval to basically repeal the signage requirements from the East Sunnyside Whiskey Ridge design standards, and then have it be subject to the sign standards that are in Title 22C 160. And it really only affects, as we talked at our last meeting, two areas within that boundary, which is shown on page 4 of your memo that I provided to you. So it's kind of highlight. So the black line shows the East Sunnyside Whiskey Ridge master plan boundary, and then the red areas show the community business and mixed use zone. So the community business in the light blue, and then the brown is the mixed use zone. And so those would be the areas that signage would be infected. The rest of it is all residential zones, and so the same provisions would apply there. But as we discussed previously, the signage requirements in the East Sunnyside Whiskey Ridge design guidelines are super restrictive. And I think it would be better for businesses to get visibility, especially along the street frontages, to allow them to utilize the sign provisions in the existing Title 22. And then secondly, just taking the design standards, similar like we did with the downtown master plan, and put them into the municipal code. So you don't got to go find a document someplace else. So an applicant can go right to the zoning code or the unified development code and dive right in and see what the design standards are, rather than trying to navigate through a website or things like that to find those standards. And so that's really the recommendation, and happy to answer any questions you may have.
If there are no questions, I'm going to open up a hearing, public testimony portion of the hearing at this time, and ask if there's anyone out there in the audience that would like to address the commission on this particular issue. I'm not seeing anybody at this time coming forward. Last call. I would entertain a motion to close the public testimony portion of this hearing.
I'll move that we close the public testimony of East Sunnyside Whiskey Ridge Design Guidelines.
Second.
I'll second.
All four. Okay, public hearing portion is closed. And do you have any more comments and or questions or anything of staff regarding this thing? I see Kristen shaking her head, no. Tom, no. Looks like you guys are pretty well satisfied with this. The recommendation that staff is seeking, you probably can read it there. It's about four lines long. So if somebody would like to, anyway, what is being asked is that we forward this to City Council with a recommendation to repeal Section G signage from the ESWR design standards and incorporating ESWR design standards outlined in Section A through F into MMC Chapter 22C.070, East Sunnyside Whiskey Ridge Master Plan Area, design requirements. Anyway, that's the boundaries of the recommendation that is requested. Someone dare to step into that one?
Well, I'll make a motion to approve whatever you said and move it on to the council.
Well, I think they recorded that, so that'd probably work, wouldn't it, Chris?
Yes, that's fine.
So do we have a second to that?
I'll second that.
Second. All four. Boy, everything's unanimous tonight. Just great when everybody's just right on the same page, right? So anyway, recommendation then to council has been approved. That completes the agenda of our public hearings this evening. We wanted to talk a little bit about meeting times as we come near to the end of the meeting here tonight. So Haley, do you want to take the floor back over and
yes, thank you, Chair Leifer. So we talked about the meetings during our last Planning Commission meeting, and I just wanted to remind the group that it was agreed on that the meetings would now be at 6:30 p.m. If the commission ever wants to revisit that and start the meetings earlier, staff would be fully supportive of that, but we are also fine with 6:30 p.m. So we are going to offer a hybrid format. So I think you can see it on the screen right here. Katrina Williams, she's our CD permit specialist. She's in there helping with recording. But anyway, if you were on Zoom right now and you didn't attend in person, you could have a camera that kind of faced the group. So I need to work with IS and get the cameras to face Planning Commission. So it's essentially like you're there. You would be on a screen if you see that picture of the table. You'd be on the north side of the building. There's a screen that pulls down. So when you're sitting in the room, you can see everybody up on the wall. I'm not doing a good job explaining this, but basically you can log into the meeting via Zoom if you're not comfortable coming in person, or let's say you're running late and you just want to hop on Zoom. You can jump onto the Zoom meeting. You'll be able to hear everything that's going on. Or you can attend the meeting in person at 6:30 in the council chambers. And for the next meeting, it's either going to be the first Tuesday or second Tuesday. If we hold a meeting, either way, the next meeting that we have will be a hybrid meeting. So please plan on coming if you want to see each other, the rest of each other's bodies, the whole thing, not just the head. We'd love to see you in person there. And I would just ask for patience with the first meeting. It's going to be the first one that we've done. And I'm sure there's going to be some tech issue and maybe the people on Zoom can't hear anything for half the meeting. I mean, just try and be patient. I'll try and not put anything super important on the agenda or a public hearing so we can kind of work through it. But just thank you in advance for your patience, because I've done these things enough to know that something will go wrong and we'll just work through it and hopefully get it ironed out for the next few meetings.
Really, I have a question. If several of us are at the live meeting and there's a couple of commissioners at home, and it sounds like they're going to be patched in, but say we want to interreact and we're on a microphone in the chambers down there, and we ask a question of somebody that's at home, will they be patched in along with their video on the screen down there so that we can interreact, or do we have to have computers that we keep live to interact with the commissioners at home?
You won't need computers. You'll be sitting there talking into a microphone, and then the people online can hear everything. So basically they're going to be up on the wall, like their face. So it's just almost like they're in the room with everybody. We've been doing this at council meetings for a year now. And you know, sometimes I'll attend a council meeting in Zoom and I'm just up on the wall. And if they say, "Hey, Director Miller, I have a question," they just turn and ask me. I hear them through their microphone and I answer and it gets to them. It's like magic. It's confusing to explain until you're there, but it works very seamlessly. So if you're there in person, to your lifer, you're going to be sitting at the podium speaking into a microphone with a camera on you. So the people on Zoom will just see, like, you know, a smaller picture of the whole group. And then the group in the room will see the Zoom faces, just like you see on the screen, just picture it on a projector screen on the side of the wall.
And then the person that's at home, they have to log on to be heard through the screen.
Yep, they just click the Zoom invite. So we'll send the Zoom invite. You click it like normal and you get patched in. It works really well if everything works, if the microphones are working and all of that. It's actually fairly seamless, but might be a little clunky the first meeting.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks. So May 10th is our next meeting and we'll be there at 6:30. Be there, be square, huh?
Yep. And we'll send out an invite for that meeting. If for some reason we need to cancel it, we'll let you know. So it'll either be the first or second meeting in May.
So has anybody else got anything to talk about, new business or anything before we close this thing down? Everybody's shaking their head sideways again. Well, this turned out being a pretty abbreviated meeting, considering. Anyway, is there a motion to adjourn?
I'll move we adjourn the April 26, 2022 Planning Commission meeting.
Move a second.
I'll second it.
Okay. Meeting is adjourned. See you guys next time.